Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Monday, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted 11-10 to send former ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson's Secretary of State nomination to the full Senate for a vote, and that'll take place this Monday. If confirmed, he will join what is set to be the wealthiest cabinet in U.S. history. Rex Tillerson's 2015 salary at Exxon was $27.3 million. So who is Rex Tillerson? In a cover story for In These Times, today's guest, oil and energy journalist and author Antonia Yuhas, writes about the man who could become the country's most dangerous Secretary of State. She writes about countless lawsuits, investigations, and allegations confronting Exxon and Rex Tillerson involving human rights abuses, unsafe working conditions, investor and public fraud, destruction of the environment, climate and public health, support of dictators, contributions to global instability and inequality, and more. Antonia Yuhas is an award-winning investigative journalist. She's the author of three books, including her latest, Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill. And Antonia joins us in studio. Hi, Antonia. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you, and very good timing, because on Monday, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted 11-10 to approve the nomination. It was a party-line vote. And what really struck you about that vote? Because Senator Marco Rubio was on the fence. The Washington Post reported that he was lobbied very, very hard by Trump's people, Dick Cheney, to vote for Rex Tillerson.
What struck me was actually that the 10 Democrats stood unified and voted against Tillerson. We're seeing so many of these nominations just really fly by. Even after contentious hearings, Democrats still voting for the nominations. In this case, all 10 Democrats stood unified and voted against Tillerson. And there was the question if Rubio was going to join them, in which case the nomination would still have gone to the full Senate, but it would have gone with an unfavorable vote from the committee. And, and I think that says a lot. In Tillerson's confirmation hearing, the original hearing, he did a terrible job, or he did a very honest job, however you want to look at it. He was himself. He was Rex Tillerson, the same man many of us have watched for years at ExxonMobil shareholder meetings. And he answered questions in the exactly identical way. He answered questions before the Senate as the CEO of Exxon, not as a man seeking to become Secretary of State. And I think those questions actually and those responses really shocked many members of the Senate, such that they felt that they simply couldn't vote for him. I think they also got, speaking of pressure, a huge amount of public pressure. This nomination became is a very important public nomination, as it should be. And senators heard from their constituents. And I think the combination of being shocked by the corporate focused, or really it's not even corporate, ExxonMobil focused answers of Rex Tillerson, and a huge amount of public pushback led the Democrats to vote against him. And then Marco Rubio, who was very unhappy about Tillerson's links to Russia and to Vladimir Putin, had been very aggressive in the hearing and then caved under pressure, which, according to the Washington Post, came literally from Dick Cheney himself, as well as lobbyists for the oil and gas industry.
Wow. What struck you about the hearings? Because you write extensively about the oil and gas industry and extensively about Exxon. Did you learn anything new in those hearings?
A few things. There was one really particularly shocking moment for me in the hearing, which really crystallized Rex Tillerson for me. He was asked about the South China Sea, and he took this very aggressive stance against China. And he said, you know, we will defend the South China Sea. China does not control the South China Sea. And the United States will, you know, defend the South. We will defend that against China. That was then perceived by the Chinese as a threat of war, which it was. And so the Chinese responded in that manner to a proposed Secretary of State saying these words in his hearing. And I thought at the time, why was he taking this stance? It's clearly not the position of the U.S. government now. I'd be shocked that he's had a conversation with Donald Trump about the South China Sea at this point, when he says he hasn't had a conversation with him about Russia in the hearing. So then we learned that ExxonMobil has a deal with the Vietnamese for the oil in the South China Sea. And so he was making a statement on behalf of ExxonMobil's interests in his confirmation hearing that was essentially a declaration of war against the Chinese. And to me, that he should have been disqualified literally at that moment. That was only about ExxonMobil, nothing else. So his allegiance and alliance and agenda is about ExxonMobil. It is not about the United States. It's not about human rights or, you know, any of those lists that we could go on for a long time. And that was crystallized. And I didn't know about that deal with the Vietnamese until the hearing. So I learned about that.
The one thing that really struck me about your story is that Donald Trump doesn't really know Rex Tillerson. You report that last year, Rex Tillerson supported Jeb Bush and gave a lot of money to Jeb Bush, even more to the Republican National Committee, $33,400. And then once it was clear that Jeb Bush was no longer a contender, ExxonMobil's employees shifted their support to Hillary Clinton. And then you write, once Trump became president-elect, a full-court Republican establishment press composed of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, James Baker, Condoleezza Rice, and Robert Gates reportedly offered glowing endorsements of Tillerson, either to Trump or to Tennessee Republican Bob Corker, chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Give us the backstory about how Rex Tillerson was chosen.
Well, what I know of the backstory is what I reported there. Essentially, Tillerson and ExxonMobil are Bush administration partners. They had spent more money than on any election previously in 2000 to get Bush and Cheney into office. The then CEO of ExxonMobil was very close with Dick Cheney. And the relationship between ExxonMobil and the Bush administration was and remains very close. Rex Tillerson personally, as you say, put his money behind Jeb Bush, as did the entire oil and gas industry. It was expected that Jeb Bush was going to be their man. When that didn't happen, actually, Exxon as a company put its money into taking back the House and the Senate, into taking the House and the Senate, and put all of its money there because it didn't necessarily want Clinton. It didn't want Trump, and it wanted to ensure that it had the Congress as a back against whoever became president, and it achieved that goal. So then you have, and Tillerson definitely didn't put any money into Trump. Not only do I think that they don't necessarily know each other, I believe that Trump and Tillerson probably don't like each other. Tillerson,
why?
Because Tillerson is a much more powerful man than Donald Trump and a much more influential man than Donald Trump. And he's also tied to the Republican oil and gas establishment. So Trump has a lot of oil people behind him, but they're not establishment oil companies. They're not Exxons and Chevrons and BPs and Shells. They're companies like Harold Hamm's Continental Resources. They're sort of the wildcat billionaire individual companies that are kind of like the oil equivalent of Donald Trump. Hmm. So he's got a lot of oil folks behind him, but they're a different set of oil folks. And they also have contradictory interests than an ExxonMobil has. So I think that Tillerson was hoisted onto Trump as the person who will speak and act on behalf of establishment Republican and establishment oil and gas interests. And also just, you know, so when you look at the Bush administration, right, these were men and some women who had worked together for 30 years, in many cases. They had come out of policy. They'd gone through oil companies and then back to policy. And they had an ideological shared perspective around empire. The Trump people are just this wily group of, you know, if they have any ideological commonality, it might be fascism, but you know, like, it's hard to sort of pin down what
corporate fascism.
Yeah. It's hard to kind of pin them down. So and also Trump himself is obviously quite unpredictable. So I believe that Tillerson is the person who's being put into the administration, probably against Trump's will, to provide the sort of steady steady imperial traditional Republican oil and gas perspective. Now, there are places where they overlap with Trump and his administration for sure, and we can talk more about that. But I think that we're going to see a very interesting potentially sort of, I think that Rex Tillerson is going to be the most powerful person within this administration. Let's put it that way.
Why?
Well, if you look just simply at the Forbes list of the most powerful people in the world, Donald Trump is very high up on it, but he wasn't previously. Tillerson ranks higher than President Obama, former President Obama, and he ranks higher, and Secretary Kerry doesn't even appear on the list. Tillerson has been the head of the largest oil and gas corporation, ExxonMobil, one of the most powerful companies in history. He was the CEO for 10 years. He's been there for 41 years. ExxonMobil is a government unto itself. It is a country unto itself. George Bush once famously said of ExxonMobil, "Nobody tells those guys what to do." Mm. It sets its own policy and then works with governments to see those interests achieved. And that's what it did with the Bush administration. I mean, it's what it's done with many administrations. And for me, actually, when I first heard about the Tillerson nomination, the first question I asked myself was, why would he want this job? Why would he want to be Secretary of State? And the answer that I came up with was twofold. One was, I didn't realize at the time that he was facing forced retirement at age 65 in March. So he was going to have to retire anyway. But still, a lot, there's plenty of former ExxonMobil CEOs, and none of them went into the U.S. government. He has unfinished business. So he's leaving ExxonMobil in much worse shape than when he came on. Profits are 65% lower than they were in 2005. Exxon has taken on an enormous amount of debt. It's cash poor. But most importantly, it is suffering from what's called its reserve replacement ratio. The amount of oil it's taking out of the ground, it's not able to replace. And that means that it's oil poor. And that makes the company very poor. And he is very tied to this company emotionally, as well as from a business perspective, obviously. And so Rex Tillerson made a huge deal while he was at ExxonMobil. And that was a deal with the Russians, such that through Tillerson's negotiations, ExxonMobil has five times the holdings in Russia than it has in the United States, which is its second largest holdings. But Tillerson, who made these amazing deals with the Russians and spent years trying to get these deals sealed, basically can't get to any of that oil or most of that oil because President Obama signed sanctions in response to the invasion of Crimea that makes the majority of that oil inaccessible to ExxonMobil.
And you report that, just to give out the numbers, ExxonMobil's 63.7 million acre Russian holdings are five times larger than its second largest holdings, 14 million acres in the United States. And in your piece, there's a photo of Rex Tillerson shaking hands with Vladimir Putin when he received a medal at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum on June 21st, 2012. And you also report in your piece that Bloomberg reported Tillerson made multiple personal visits to the White House since 2014 to talk about Russian sanctions. Unable to budge Obama, Tillerson may now just get the job done himself, directing negotiations as Secretary of State and advocating for Trump to revoke those sanctions.
Yeah, and these are worrisome for a lot of reasons. One, of course, is supporting Vladimir Putin's administration and the multiple human rights and many other abuses that Putin has enacted. And actually, I have to say, Marco Rubio in the hearing very aggressively brought up Aleppo, brought up very important issues and that were important to take into consideration. But in addition to that, the majority of these oil holdings are in the Russian Arctic. And this is an area that I think most of us would agree should be, we've got a list of, if 80% of fossil fuels need to stay in the ground to avert the worst of climate crisis, there are many areas that I think we can all agree should be the top of the list of places we just don't go. The Arctic is one of them, which is why President Obama joined with Justin Trudeau to take Arctic oil in the United States and Canada almost completely off the table. Russian Arctic oil, however, is on the table. And the moment that those sanctions are lifted, ExxonMobil can join with Russia's oil companies to pursue development in the Russian Arctic. That's also problematic because if you look at it, and I have a picture in the piece that Greenpeace actually provided, the way that oil has developed in Russia is of the lowest standards, and there are oil spills constantly, perpetually, from drilling that already takes place on land in the Arctic. And there's a picture in the article that shows just, you know, a lake of oil. And that's because of very, very poor production standards. So not only are you talking about drilling in one of the most dangerous parts of the world, but under extremely poor standards, with ExxonMobil, you know, joining with the Russians, to me, there is nothing positive about any of those words.
At first, I thought this was just a very beautiful photo, and then realized this beautiful place is covered in oil. On this picture in your piece, in May 2012, the Greenpeace Russia reports that every 18 months, over 4 million barrels of oil spew into the Arctic Ocean from Russian operations. That is a lot of oil.
It's a lot of oil. Yeah.
Today we are joined by Antonia Juhas, an independent journalist, investigative journalist. She writes about oil and energy, and she's the author of three books, including her latest, Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill. And she wrote a cover story for In These Times called The United States of Exxon, and you can find it at yourcallradio.org. If you have any questions or comments for Antonia about Rex Tillerson, again, on Monday, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted 11-10 to approve his nomination. It was a party line vote. 11 Republicans voted yes, 10 Democrats voted no. This Monday, the full Senate will vote to nominate or not Rex Tillerson to be Secretary of State. But there's no way the Democrats can block this, right? Unless three Republican senators vote no? Is that right?
Democrats can block this if three Republicans say no. I would frame it that way.
Democrats, but they all have to vote no.
They all have to
Every single one, 48.
That's right.
And then three Republicans.
Well, unless 10 Republicans vote no.
Right.
But yeah.
So what are you hearing at this point?
I mean, you know, I think that this is not a done deal. There's been an enormous amount of pushback, as I said. I was in Washington, D.C. last week and was myself and a Stars and Stripes reporter were the only two people in John McCain's office when 10 U.S. veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan and other U.S. conflicts went into Senator McCain's office to demand a meeting with the senator to express their opposition to Rex Tillerson's nomination. They waited for hours. Senator McCain was there. He was just a few doors down. One of the veterans, a former U.S. sniper who's an opponent now of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, went up to Senator McCain trying to hand him a letter saying, you know, we're here, we'd like to meet with you, we want to oppose Tillerson. McCain wouldn't even look him in the eye. He turned around and headed back into his office. And those veterans were ultimately arrested and put into jail and held for several hours in D.C. just trying to get Senator McCain to hear their voices in opposition to Tillerson. That is an incredible, you know, activity. So, you know, I think that, you know, Senator McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham were two people and Ron Paul were three who were potential Republicans who had originally expressed a great deal of concern about Tillerson. They've all since said that they will vote for him. At this point, it seems that all of the Republicans will vote for him, but that's not, you know, it's not done until it's done. And I think at a minimum, this is a nomination on which people's voices need to be heard, because there also is the question of if he is confirmed, how much authority will he carry forward and how much pushback will there be in the Congress against actions that he seeks to take? And that's the stage that's being set now with how senators hear or not from the public about their opinions about Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State.
And there have been also actions in front of politicians' offices all week, people pressuring Democrats specifically to vote no, and Republicans to vote no on Donald Trump's nominees. And if you want to call your senator, this is a time to raise your voice, because again, this vote is on Monday. Several other votes will be next week, including Jeff Sessions and Betsy DeVos. The Senate number is 202-224 3121, 202-224-3121. And if you'd like to join our conversation today with independent journalist Antonia Juhas, we're talking about Rex Tillerson. What kind of Secretary of State would he be, given the kind of CEO he was at Exxon for 10 years, and he was at that company for 41 years. ExxonMobil operates in 200 countries and has current direct joint ventures with companies from China and Russia to Saudi Arabia. So what questions do you have about Rex Tillerson? If you work on climate change issues, what are your thoughts on Tillerson as Secretary of State? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. As you report, Exxon operates in 200 countries, and there are countless lawsuits, investigations, and allegations confronting the company. Your lead was about the lawsuit that's happening in Aceh province in Indonesia. And you write that these lawsuits involve human rights abuses, unsafe working conditions, public health, support of dictators. I mean, the list just goes on. Which one really stands out for you?
The one that I open with is a case that's actually about to be heard in Washington, D.C. at a U.S. district court. And this is an active case where the judge has ruled that it, you know, it wants to hear this case argued, and it should be coming up any day now, as the lead plaintiff's lawyer told me. And this stood out. You know, I've been investigating the oil industry for a better part of 20 years at this point, and this was a case that utterly shocked me and upset me. So this took place in Aceh in Indonesia, and the case alleges that security forces under ExxonMobil's employ engaged in extreme human rights abuse to protect Exxon's operations, including murder, torture, sexual assault. The case that I open with, or the piece that I open with, is John Doe number 2. So they're all John Does in the case, because those that are still living are afraid for their lives, and their widows are afraid for their lives, for those who are deceased. And in this case, John Doe number 2 said that he was passing by ExxonMobil's facilities, was captured by the ExxonMobil security force, was blindfolded, was taken, was tortured. At one point, the blindfold was lifted off his face. He was taken outside and shown a pit full of human heads, and told that this is what would happen to him. Fortunately, he was released after 3 months, and then, according to him, his home was burned down afterwards. Now, this case involves human rights abuse from 2000 to 2004. The only thing that ended this situation, by the way, was the tsunami that destroyed Aceh, but kept the ExxonMobil facility standing. But the people were essentially gone, and so there wasn't any more conflict. And so the tsunami is what ended this situation, but the court case goes on. And what I reveal or found in my story is that Rex Tillerson is specifically named in the case, because during a portion of this time, he was president of ExxonMobil. And the case alleges that there were executives in the U.S., not just the subsidiary in Aceh, but in the U.S., who are making decisions about this case. And the court case says, names Tillerson on a list of executives who met with Indonesian officials. So to me, you know, this is just a horrific case. But of course, this is an active case still being investigated. But ExxonMobil, by the way, does not argue that the human rights abuses did not occur, but rather that it is not liable for them. But right now, you know, as I speak, ExxonMobil is working with dictators around the world with incredibly abusive policies towards their populations, Equatorial Guinea, in Angola, and has for decades worked with every brutal dictator you can think of. And in the hearings, one of the senators, and I can't remember who, specifically asked Tillerson, you know, is there anyone you wouldn't work with based on their human rights records? And Tillerson essentially answered no. And he said, well, there's countries, if, you know, their contract terms weren't good, or, you know, if there wasn't the appropriate protection under rule of law. That was his answer. Mm-hmm. And the senator pushed back and he said, but, you know, what about human rights abuse? What about, you know, all these other issues? And Tillerson basically said, you know, no, That's not on our list. And their record proves it. ExxonMobil has worked with every dictator, including working with Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Iraq after the break. But just to continue on Aceh,
yeah.
The Exxon has been this has been in the courts for 15 years.
That's right.
And you quote Terrence Collingsworth, the human rights lawyer who has fought Exxon for 15 years in defense of the people of Aceh. And he says, quote, imagine what will happen in the future. People around the world will not feel that the United States will back them up in trying to hold these companies accountable. Instead, he argues, we will have, even more than today, a sweetheart arrangement between foreign governments and the U.S. government to promote the exploitation of natural resources at all costs.
It's a particularly troublesome development right now, given that what we're seeing around the world and in the United States is the movement of people where oil is explored for, produced, transported, sold, who are rising up to say, you know, we have rights. We have rights about whether or not oil is produced here or transported here, how it's produced, under what terms. And at that moment when we've got these movements led by Native populations, indigenous populations, everyone who's affected by the climate and oil rising up, you have the potential for a government that is set to align itself very clearly with the interests of oil and the interests of repressive governments. And that is a very disturbing trend. And that obviously is already happening here in the United States with the Dakota Access and Keystone Pipeline orders.
And you said this lawsuit is going to be heard soon in Washington?
Yeah, it's been set for trial.
Did this come up in the hearings at all?
Somewhat. Not that Tillerson is named in the case, but it was included in sort of a laundry list of human rights abuses by some members.
Antonia Yuhas is an investigative journalist. Her latest piece is on the cover of In These Times, the United States of Exxon, Why Rex Tillerson Could Be America's Most Dangerous Secretary of State. And you can find her piece at yourcallradio.org. Again, the full Senate is going to vote on this nomination on Monday. So if you'd like to make your voice heard, the phone number for the Senate is 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. This is your call, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll-free. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. If you prefer to write rather than call, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org, leave a comment at yourcallradio.org, or tweet us at yourcallradio. If your company participates in a matching gift program, ask your HR department how to make KALW a beneficiary. Last year, KALW raised almost $30,000 due to employers matching their employees' donations. Join the hundreds of KALW listeners who have made a big difference by taking the simple step. For more information, click the support button at KALW.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of Donald Trump's executive actions. It is incredibly difficult to keep up with everything that has happened this week, but we're going to focus on specific policies. The administration ordered the EPA to stop communicating with the public and giving out grants. Trump says he will bring back torture and black sites. Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto just canceled next week's meeting with Donald Trump after tensions rose over the wall and his administration's sweeping immigration crackdown. So we've got a lot to talk about tomorrow. One big question is, how does the media not get sidelined by these, quote, alternative facts and actually focus on real issues? That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And of course, that alternative facts came from Kellyanne Conway on Meet the Press last Sunday. Today we are joined by Antonia Yuhas. She's an investigative journalist who writes about oil and energy. Her latest book is called Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill. And I hope you can take the time to read her cover story in These Times this month. It's on our website, and it's called The United States of Exxon, Why Rex Tillerson Could Be America's Most Dangerous Secretary of State. The Senate is voting on this confirmation on Monday. It's the full Senate. Senate. This Monday, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted 11-10 to send Tillerson's nomination to the full Senate. It was a party line vote. And if you'd like to express your views to your senator, the phone number is 202-224-3121. And if you'd like to express your views on this show, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Kim in Berkeley. Hi, Kim. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Sorry. I was calling in. When Trump met with the CIA, one of the things that he said in his rambling was, you know, we got out of Iraq and it was bad, and, you know, we should have left with some of the oil. You know, if we're going to put in all of that energy, we should leave with something. And so that's really concerning to me, is he saying that if we're going to engage in war, then we should take away resources in order to compensate ourselves. And being that we're looking at Rex Tillerson as the state secretary of state, I just wanted to get your feedback about that concern, if that would be the goal of the U.S.
Thank you so much for that question. That was shocking to me. And I keep getting shocked, which I didn't know I still had it in me to get this shocked. Yeah. So speaking to the CIA, Donald Trump said we should have taken the oil. He also said, by the way, and we might get another chance to do so. So he threatened war against Iraq, in addition to saying we should have taken the oil, which, by the way, is against the Geneva Conventions. It is illegal to have a clearly explicit profit motivation or profit taking from a war. Now, this becomes, I am also deeply troubled by this, as you are, because Trump also said earlier in the election cycle that he wished that we had gone in and taken the oil, and that he would have put Exxon on the ground to take the oil. And he said that U.S. troops would then surround Exxon to protect them. He said those words when he was running for president of the United States. Now he is president of the United States, and he's naming the CEO of ExxonMobil as the head of his secretary of state while he's threatening war against Iraq to take its oil. Now, Exxon already has a lot of Iraq's oil thanks to the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Prior to the 2003 invasion, Western oil companies were shut out of Iraq. And I detail this extensively in the article. Thanks to the activities of ExxonMobil, among other oil companies, that helped very clearly articulate how to win the war for oil, they succeeded in now Western oil companies are heavily in Iraq, including ExxonMobil, which got access to one of the largest oil fields in the world as a result of the war, the West Guarana oil field. So Exxon already is there, already is pumping oil. And by the way, I mean, just, you know, if I have to make this point, Islamic State does control a fair amount of oil. And that is an important issue in thinking about Islamic State. It's primarily in Syria, and they have some oil in Iraq, but it's primarily in Syria. So when Donald Trump says that he wants to go in and take the oil from Islamic State, that means he's talking about, if he knows this, going into Syria. The oil that Islamic State has in Iraq, which is quite limited, of course, the government of Iraq is our ally. So he's saying that he wants to go into Iraq. I can't even try and parse this out. So in any case, ExxonMobil, which is already one of the largest victors of the Iraq war, now we have the CEO of ExxonMobil as Secretary of State joining with the President of the United States talking about more wars for oil. Where I honestly am concerned is two parts on this. One is, I actually think if there is anywhere that the Trump administration genuinely has in its sights, and that means the people who Trump has appointed who actually have policy expertise and an agenda, it's Iran. And Iran does have a lot of oil, which we don't have a tremendous amount of access to. And I am sure that ExxonMobil would love to have greater access to Iranian oil. Donald Trump's foreign policy team seems to be fairly unified in things that they are not. We're mostly not unified, but one thing they are unified in is Iran and their opposition towards Iran and wanting, you know, if John Bolton does become Undersecretary of State, less than a month ago, he said that he wants to see regime change in Iran. So that is something I'm very concerned about if we're talking about oil wars. And then I had another point on that, but I lost it.
Well, in your, I mean, you have so many amazing facts in your story here. You write that before the invasion of Iraq, the domestic oil industry in Iraq was fully nationalized, completely closed to Western oil companies. And then within 6 years, it was largely privatized and utterly dominated by foreign firms, including Exxon. Of course it's about oil. We cannot really deny that, said General John Abizaid, former head of the U.S. Central Command and Military Operations in Iraq in 2007. I want to ask you, what role do you think Dick Cheney is going to play with this administration? Because you point out that ExxonMobil met with Cheney's staff in January 2003, 2 months before the invasion, to discuss plans for Iraq's post-war industry. While then, CEO Lee Raymond had many private meetings with longtime friend Dick Cheney. How close are Rex Tillerson and Dick Cheney?
I don't know. I mean, I do know, as we said in the beginning, that Cheney lobbied Rubio, that Cheney was on the list of those who lobbied either Trump personally or Senator Corker. You know, again, I think of this as, I mean, one of the great beneficiaries of the Iraq War was also Halliburton, Cheney's former company. I think of Cheney in this story as part of the Bush administration people who want to see Tillerson there representing their interests. And so, yes, it's quite possible that Cheney will have a direct ear to the administration through Tillerson. And you know, we can all be very deeply worried about that. This was the other point I had wanted to make. Donald Trump has said that he wants to put, you know, ending Islamic State as one of the first, you know, achievements that he has. We know study after study after study has proven that one of the greatest drivers of antipathy towards the United States over the last 10 years has been the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, with people in the Middle East believing that the United States is pursuing an agenda that is about aggressively about its own interests, and oil is often listed at the top of that, of reasons why they distrust the United States and dislike the activities of the United States, because we've been pursuing wars, which at a minimum, if are not, you know, the number one issue isn't oil, it's certainly top among them. And that if we want to end, you know, violent opposition to the United States, that is not going to be accomplished by sending a message to the world, which is that we are going to put, you know, the CEO of an oil company as the head of our State Department, and with a president that's talking about you know, launching war for oil. And that if we want to send a message about the United States as one that is more engaged in the world from a diplomatic perspective, from a human rights perspective, from an environmental perspective, this, and to win friends in that way, this is not the way to do it.
Well, thank you for the call, Kim. Today we're speaking with Antonia Yuhas, investigative journalist, about her cover story, In These Times, the United States of Exxon, Why Rex Tillerson Could Be America's Most Dangerous Secretary of State. The full Senate is going to vote on Rex Tillerson's nomination to become Secretary of State. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted 11-10 this Monday to approve the nomination. It was a party line vote. And let's go next to Tom in San Francisco. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. During the Senate committees, Tillerson was asked about his company's partnership with Shell from overseas, and in creating a company called Infinity that actually went into Iran around the sanctions of the United States and actually promoted their oil there. In his testimony, he said twice, "I don't remember the details. I don't recall the details," and it was left at that. What about that story?
That's right. It's an excellent question. So there was a series of questions about places where Exxon has operated contrary to U.S. sanctions against those countries. And you're right, Iran is one of them. Syria was another one. The Sudan was another one. Where Exxon formed partnerships with companies that went in and did operations in those countries. And Tillerson denied that he had lobbied, that ExxonMobil had lobbied to have the sanctions removed against Iran or against Russia. And that was just an outright lie. And immediately the senators actually responded to say, you know, I think you called my office personally to lobby on the sanctions. And then, of course, there are detailed lobbying reports that are released by companies that show that that ExxonMobil had lobbied on Iran and on Russia. On Iran, actually, and this is something I write about quite a bit in The Tyranny of Oil in my second book, ExxonMobil, and at this point it was Mobil, actually joined a group called USA Engage that was lobbying to see the sanctions removed against Iran. And Mobil actually took out a full-page advertisement in the New York Times trying to get the sanctions removed. So for Tillerson to claim that ExxonMobil did not lobby on Iran is just ridiculous, and even more ridiculous to say that ExxonMobil wasn't lobbying to have the sanctions removed on Russia. And again, I think this was an example again of Rex Tillerson, the ExxonMobil CEO, because I think what he was thinking in his head, there it's a very the lawyer who you quoted, who I quote in the piece, had said to me a phrase which I hear often in response to ExxonMobil's legal strategies, which is it's scorched earth. Mm-hmm. They have more money, more time, more lawyers than anyone, and they will fight and fight and fight and fight. And that's exactly what Tillerson was doing in that hearing. He was taking a straight legal framework, which is that so we have the lobbying reports from ExxonMobil. The lobbying reports don't tell you which direction the company was lobbying. They just tell you they were lobbying on an issue. So I think what he was saying in that Senate hearing was prove it. Prove that I was lobbying to get them removed. You know, you can't. And so he was taking that very legalese and oppositional approach. But yes, Exxon not only lobbied on these issues, but also in contrary to existing U.S. sanctions, had operations in countries that most of us would be, you know, appalled to know.
Hmm. And we have a question about climate change. But speaking of lobbying, you report that in 2008 and 2009, Exxon nearly doubled its already top-tier federal lobbying expenditures, $29 million and $27 million respectively, outspending every other corporation to thwart congressional and White House efforts to pass meaningful climate change legislation. Let's hear from, on that issue, Greg in Pennsylvania or Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Palo Alto, yes.
Hi.
Well, thank you. I don't think the Dems have the numbers, even if they voted as a bloc, to stop these people. So I think they're going to get confirmed. I thought Rubio's performance was just that, a performance. I never thought he was going to vote against Tillerson. But actually, the questions I had were comments, and see what your guest feels, is that I don't know if it was Wyden or somebody else during the hearings asked him a direct question about ExxonMobil's having conducted research into global warming, and then they found out that it actually was a problem. But they spent the next 10 or 20 or how many years doing climate denial when they had research that indicated that it was in fact occurring. There was a follow-up question. Once again, it might have been Wyden who said, "Look, are you telling me, did you or did you not know about this?" Tillerson said, I'm no longer with them. You'd have to contact the company. Okay. And then Wyden said, well, I really find that hard to believe. And so he asked him a direct question about whether or not he knew about it or he was just refusing to answer the question. And his response was really bizarre. He said, a little of both. And I just thought, you know, this is enough to sink this guy. It should have been, but apparently the Democrats didn't have the number. And one last comment, I just really would like to get a personal response maybe from your guests, and that's this. Clearly these people, I think, understand that global warming is a problem. Unless if they don't, then they're really in worse shape than I think. But it's clear that they have no concern about the future at all. And these people have kids and grandkids. And I'm wondering if anybody just would ask them, hey, what kind of a future are you people wanting to leave to your family?
Well, we learned yesterday that some wealthy people in Silicon Valley are building bunkers.
That is, in fact, the answer. Yeah,
but it's a question that a lot of people talk about and wonder about.
So I totally agree. And you brought up, a really key moment in that hearing where, again, Tillerson showed his colors as someone who will only speak as a CEO and not in any way trying to convince the senators that he actually is concerned about these issues. So on climate change, this is a really important part of this story, which I go into quite a bit in the piece. Tillerson has said, and he said in the hearing, that he acknowledges the reality of climate change, that, that human activity is causing the climate to change. And this is actually a line that all of the nominees have taken basically verbatim from Tillerson, many of whom have in the past, like Rick Perry, have been flat out climate deniers. In their hearings, they took a different path, which is to say, we don't deny it, we acknowledge it. So then that has sort of silenced a lot of parties on, okay, so they're not climate deniers. So we have to listen to the rest of the story. And this is the line that Tillerson has taken for a very long time, is the rest of the story. So the rest of the story is, and they all say this verbatim, what we don't know is the degree to which human activity impacts the climate, and what we, and science is unable to predict what those impacts will be. So the policy implication is identical. Therefore, we're not going to do anything about it because there's nothing to be done. And also, it puts the problem into the future. Mm-hmm. So this is a problem in the future that science can't predict, which is, of course, absolutely false, because of course we know that climate change is a problem right now that kills.
And Exxon knew back in the 70s. And I just want to mention this because, again, there's so much to follow. Greg brought up the investigation. The Inside Climate News was named a finalist for the Pulitzer for public service on this investigation. The story spans four decades. It's based on primary sources, including internal company files dating back to the late 70s, interviews with former Exxon employees. It describes how Exxon conducted cutting-edge climate research in the 70s. And then, without revealing all that it had learned, worked at the forefront of climate denial, manufacturing doubt about the scientific consensus that its own scientists had confirmed.
That's right.
Why didn't this get more attention at the hearing and in the media coverage leading up to the hearing and after the hearing?
I felt that it did. I think where that then gets, and there are several court cases right now around this, and because the court cases are, Exxon knew that burning fossil fuels harms the climate. It then funded climate denialists. The law cases are, was it misleading its own shareholders? So it knew this information. It chose not to act on this information. In fact, it went the opposite direction. Was that, was it lying to its shareholders and in its activities? For me, the bigger problem actually at this point is that even once this information came out, and ExxonMobil has said over and over again as a company, we acknowledge the reality of climate change. We support the Paris Climate Agreement. At the same time, ExxonMobil continues to fund climate denialist organizations, continues to fund organizations that are doing everything they can to undermine the Paris Climate Agreement, to undermine the Clean Power Plan. And it continues to do the same activity just with a public face that says, oh, we get it. We're on the right team. And Rex Tillerson has that exact same position. And it, what is even more disturbing is his diehard allegiance to oil and gas. So what his line is, we don't know, we can't predict what the science can't predict what will happen in the future with climate change. Literally, his line was, we can't measure the clouds, so science doesn't know what's going to happen with climate change. But he believes technology will solve any problem that arises, and oil and gas is going to remain the core part of our energy equation moving forward into the future. And that is the most important sort of bottom line to take from all of these confirmation hearings, is that I agree with the caller. I think they do know. They know that burning fossil fuels harms the climate, but right. They want policies that enable them to continue to pursue oil and gas, and that's what they're going to do.
I want to ask you about some breaking news that we're just learning. The Washington Post, Josh Rogan, is reporting that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's job running the department just got considerably more difficult. The entire senior level of management officials resigned Wednesday, part of an ongoing mass exodus of Senate Foreign Service officers who, in his words, don't want to stick around for Trump. David Wade, who served as State Department Chief of Staff under Secretary of State John Kerry, said, quote, it's the single biggest simultaneous departure of institutional memory that anyone can remember, and that's incredibly difficult to replicate. Department expertise expertise in security, management, administrative positions, in particular, are difficult to replicate and difficult to find in the private sector. Also, several senior foreign service officers in the State Department's regional bureaus have also left their posts or resigned since the election.
Wow.
What's your response to this?
I mean, that's incredibly important and powerful and, you know, good for them, and is a reflection of what this administration is doing. You know, we've seen, you know, climate change is a key threat that is a national security threat in addition to all sorts of other types of threats. And when you have an administration coming in that had initially required the EPA to strip climate change from its website, is already moving to eliminate regulations, is already threatening war, is already putting out alternative facts. When you have, you know, a Secretary of State who threatens war on China during his confirmation hearings for the benefit of his own company, you know, I think it's absolutely appropriate that you should have people quitting who do not want to show their support. So I think, you know, that also shows that there is great resistance to this nomination. And if you have State Department officials quitting,
the entire senior administrative team,
that's amazing. So that means that it also means that there is a strong chance that Republicans may yet be convinced to vote against Rex Tillerson's nomination.
Wow. And we just got a call from Kathleen who says, if you want to call local numbers because the D.C. numbers at this point are completely jammed. And again, the vote for Rex Tillerson's nomination for the full Senate is happening this Monday. So now is your chance to make your voice heard. Antonia, we almost have to end, but you're going to be speaking tonight at the Resist rally, the No Dapple, No Keystone rally that's happening in front of the San Francisco Federal Building tonight at 6 o'clock, 97th Street. We don't have much time, but President Donald Trump signed executive orders on the Dakota Access and Keystone XL. What can you tell us about those executive orders? It's kind of confusing about what these things mean.
The first order on Keystone gives the Secretary of State, who could be Rex Tillerson, 60 days to approve or disapprove Keystone XL. That's the most straightforward. Tillerson has already indicated his support for the pipeline. Dakota Access, what that order says is it orders the Army Corps of Engineers to consider eliminating the requirement to do the environmental impact statement on the passage of the pipeline under Lake Inouye, which is the key thing that has stopped the pipeline thus far. So these are definitely items of concern that have the potential to move these pipelines forward.
Well, there's so much resistance happening. There was a resist banner that's flying right over the White House, right near the White House.
Greenpeace.
Right. Yeah. And then No Dapple protests are happening across the country in front of banks. And again, this one tonight at 6 o'clock in front of the San Francisco Federal Building. And you'll be there speaking.
That's right. I'll be there speaking.
Antonia Yuhas is an award-winning investigative journalist. She writes about oil and energy. She's the author of three books. Her latest, Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill. I hope you can check out her front page article on In These Times. It's called The United States of Exxon, and we have it at yourcallradio.org. Antonia, thank you for coming in, and thanks for sharing all this information.
Thanks for having me, Rose.
And again, the nomination for Rex Tillerson will be happening this Monday. The full Senate will be voting. You can call Washington, or as our caller just said, the lines are full, so you might want to call the local numbers. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of Donald Trump's executive actions. Antonia mentioned the EPA, which has been ordered to stop talking to the public and giving out grants. Trump says he wants to bring back torture and black sites. And then we just got word that Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto canceled next week's meeting with Trump after tensions rose over the wall. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us.